My name's Janet Grant. I'm the registrar here at Holden Village. I've met many of you. My background is Midwestern. I grew up in Wisconsin and lived in Minnesota for about 5 years. I have now lived here in the village as registrar for about 16 months. Previous to that, I was working at St. Olaf College in Minnesota as assistant dean of students there. I, previous to that, had been studying at the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis and got a master's degree in counseling. My real love is in counseling, but here I am putting people in beds and greeting and meeting and that sort of thing. So, and I love that too. Tonight, we come together to a forum about the topic, how do you get your nurture? Which is kind of a funny question, I think. But you must have some idea about it or some interest in it. I have added, or do you? The format of a forum here at Holden generally is one where you, as the people in the room, are really the people, the presenters, the people with the ideas, the people with the knowledge, the people with the information. I'm going to stay within that format tonight mostly, but in a little bit different way. I will intend to speak a little bit, not too much, hopefully, and then turn it over to you folks and to see about how do you get your nurture, how do you keep going, how do you deal with the stress that you have, in hopes that you can share some ideas with other people, what works for you, what doesn't work for you, and to affirm yourselves in your own methods of nurture, hopefully, and maybe get some ideas from other folks. I do realize that most of you lead stress-filled lives, and I'm hoping that, and it seems like, that most of you find ways to nurture yourselves. Just by your very presence in this place, I hope you count that as taking care of yourselves. It seems like that as I look around. It's real nice to see people enjoying the outside, enjoying one another, enjoying being together, dancing, singing music. And not realizing that most of you are usually in the leadership of that, and just seems like people are enjoying not having to plan it.
Amen.
We'll be at your place next week.
Bring a lot of people with you.
Okay. That's not my mode of nurture. So where do you get your support and where do you get your nurture? How do you get your own self-care? I am struck these last 24 hours by two sermons, one last night and one tonight, about crosses to bear, taking care of others, ministering to others. And I'm reminded of a story from my life. I was in college at a Presbyterian college in Wisconsin, and I had overdone, stretched myself a little bit too far, and was having some stomach problems, not quite ulcer, but was having stomach problems, and went through all of the tests, all those icky, gory tests for stomach problems, and went to the dean of students, who was my counselor, and he too had some physical problems because of the stress in his life related to his eyes and his sight. And he counted that as his cross to bear and told me about his cross to bear, in effect saying, your stomach problems are your cross to bear for your ministry, for your care of others. At the time, it made sense to me. Now I'm kind of angry about that. I'm glad I'm angry. I think I've thought it through, but sometimes I get real mixed up when I hear the cross to bear message and take care of yourself message coming in. And how does that all fit? Where are the biblical bases for that? Where does my theology fit with all that? Where is that delicate balance? Because I do believe it is a delicate balance. And it's a different balancing point for each one of us. How do we find that? How do we discover that? As we get older, I hope that I am more fine-tuned to where my balance point is. There are lots of hints that you can read about and books you can read these days, people you can listen to, and you can talk about it, you can get away, you can run, you can find ways to vent your anger by pounding on pillows, you can give up, give in, do something for someone else. The other day, I was feeling sorry for myself. I don't remember why, just one of those days. I went to bed that night thinking if you could just cry it out, you'd feel better. So I laid in bed and I tried to squeeze these tears out of my head. I got two giant tears, and I thought, two giant tears is a start, floods will come any second. A knock on my door. I couldn't believe it. I went down to my door, someone was there, had a kind of a routine kind of question, and then I realized something else was going on for her too. And I realized I needed to listen to her. And at that point, the delicate balance was in listening to her and kind of knowing that we are both in this together, we need to support one another. I needed to listen to her, she could listen to me. Sometimes that works. Recreation, taking care of yourself physically, having good food around you, eating a balanced meal, not chomping on popcorn all the time. That's okay too. Okay. That's my problem. That's my good friend, as food is my good friend. That's another whole session. Keeping things in perspective if we can, within our values, what's important to us, is it really worth the stress that we're giving something? Trying to sit back and really thinking it through. Keeping a sense of humor is important and being creative in that. If you can sit back and laugh once in a while, it helps. Those are some things that kind of came off the top of my head. For starters, I said that I didn't want to talk too long because you're the experts about what works for you. The method I want to use tonight is somewhat different. Around the room, I have some sheets of paper, and I've made some broad kind of categories. Over here, I have hobbies, recreation. Back there is self-expression, solitude, self-indulgence, corporateness. What I'd like for you folks to do is to think about how you nurture yourself and pick the heading that you think your nurturing fits within. Think about that for a minute. Think about how you nurture yourself and then pick the heading that fits for you.
Will you define corporateness?
No, I'm not going to make any definitions. I want you to fit it if it, some of these will overlap, and I want you to make your own definition of it and then go to it if that's it. Anybody can start? Go right ahead.
Sure, we all thought we ought to be in every group, first of all. somebody else who was in our group, I want you to be sure and say something. We talked about letter writing and writing in general. And the rest of it we discussed as having an audience or not having an audience, such as talking and crafts and art and music and the work that we do that nurtures us. But if we, but letter write or keeping a journal is not for an audience, it's for yourself. But most of the rest of it was projected outward, which is different.
Okay.
I missed the topic. What's your
Self-expression.
Self-expression.
Anybody else in our group speak up?
Express yourself.
Sometimes silence is an expression.
Expression of silence.
So other people are involved in your expression, so it sounded like.
Yeah.
For some of the things that we mentioned don't necessarily, or there were those of us who had various things. For instance, someone playing some music or expressing themselves through music, one of the people in our group might like an audience there to applaud. Mm-hmm. Whereas another person in the group might say, no, I'm doing the music for me. I'm expressing myself for myself. So the self-expression could take either side of that. When we talked about the art and craft, we said that we tried to understand the difference between that and hobbies. And I'm not sure that we really came to something like this, but we thought, if you think of something like coin collecting as differentiated from trying weaving with a free-form pattern, or getting a paint and number kit versus going out and sketching something as you see it, that there was a way in which we felt drawn towards self-expression that kept us from going to the hobbies group. Mm-hmm. It wasn't something we did that we collected or that we did on a regular basis that made us feel particularly good, but a lot of sampling of a lot of different things to express ourselves at the time.
How did you find that nurturing? What was nurturing about those things? Anybody? Yeah.
Nurturing is what makes you feel good, isn't it?
Is it?
Well. Or a satisfaction, a personal satisfaction of some sort. Mm-hmm. Even if you're doing it for somebody else, you can have satisfaction, and that's okay. And you can do it for yourself and have satisfaction, and that's okay. And I consider either one of those nurturing.
I don't think we ever really got down to how it is nurturing. I think we were affirming that it was nurturing, mm-hmm. You know, whatever the thing we were doing.
Other responses or other groups or whatever.
We looked at our list and
yours was
self-indulgence. By the way, we decided we deserved a name.
Self-indulgence.
What was the list? I want you to read it.
Yeah, why don't you read your list?
I don't.
Who has the self-indulgence list?
Eating, movies, television, books of questionable virtue, comics, electronic media input, newspapers, sports section in particular, sex, spending money, drinking, tab, coffee, booze, talking to other people, sleep, exercise, and all of it was postponing stress.
Postponing?
You are a bad group.
We were sort of thinking in terms of whether we never really defined nurturing, but we did say maybe this is postponing stress.
Yeah.
And then we asked the question, could all these things that were posted on the wall at some time be considered a postponement of stress and not necessarily nurturing?
That's an interesting question.
Mm-hmm. It would almost seem to me that stress, I mean, nurturing has to go beyond merely the relief of stress, but there has to be some kind of a growth function in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's typically followed, isn't it? That nurture is related to growth.
Yeah.
And anything to nurture is to grow. It's the purpose of the nurture. Mm-hmm.
Don't you nurture old people that are senile that aren't going to grow anymore?
I mean, maybe some serious questions in bioethics at that point.
Mm-hmm. All right.
A little trouble with that postponement of stress. Is that possible?
Postponing and dealing with it, I guess, that would be
my consequences of it, or
admitting it.
I mean, the stress is going to be there. Whether you if you take a little time off, maybe you can come out of a little pressure if you've done something. You know.
Maybe both of them.
Well, it could be both. I mean, if you have to talk to your hated enemy, and you know, sometime you have to talk to that person. You just keep postponing it by doing other things.
You postpone the doing it, but you don't postpone the stress.
It's the stress. Well, not this. You, yes and no. I mean, you. If you know that the particular encounter is going to be a conflagration, there's still stress in postponing it,
right.
But at least you've postponed the confrontation,
yeah.
which is also stressful of a different kind.
Yeah.
Maxine, I was going to say, you may consciously know, but it'd be my guess that your body will be stressed anyway, because it'll just tell you. After a while, you'll have that ulcer anyhow. You can't postpone stress. You'll play a game, but your body won't play. That's what stress is all about, isn't it?
The things that we talked about in recreation allowed us to open up and be listeners to God telling us what to do during this time. Where I see that the list that they've given with TV and some of these other things, I think closes in on me. Doesn't allow you to let a voice come through. And we had a wonderful talk about the two forms of recreation that we enjoyed. One was running and the other skiing. And we both said that we could have been in the solitude group in that sense, because they tended to be things that you might do alone. And that was probably the time that we were nurturing more ourselves at the times when we were alone. Mm-hmm. But the idea of being able to set a goal when you're running and saying that after, you know, I'm gonna do 2 or 3 miles and making it, that feeling of accomplishment also is nurturing. Just the feeling of being out in God's world. What is your first name? I didn't
hear Jerry.
Jerry was talking about running here, you know, and looking up and seeing God's magnificence. I have the feeling of skiing as a cross country skier in the wintertime when the surroundings change every single day. One day the snow is on every little branch, and the next day it's down, or the next day it's coming down, and the thrill of realizing what God is sharing with us in this, and just being able to talk at that time out loud with probably not too many other people within hearing distance, and maybe if you need to talk to somebody, you're talking it out and hearing your own voice say it and things like that, seem to give both of us an opportunity to let God fill us and give us the right words to say if we needed to, and to deal with some stressful things of people in our lives and things like that.
Did you make pejorative judgments in choosing these categories?
What do you mean?
That is, were some of these designed to allow us to say this stuff over here is bad and what we choose over here is better?
No.
Oh, okay. Just one.
I just did that, didn't I?
You were here first. You feel bad, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
You feel bad.
Yeah, because, you know, when I read the comics or go to a movie, there's some voices that come through. And I think when you do recreation or go skiing down the hill, to say that you're not doing that for yourself.
Oh, okay.
Well, you didn't say that. No, because lots of times something like that, like over in the hobby department there, one of them was, I have a hobby I take care of, have 5 friends over in horse farm. Well, you know, it's nice to go over there and spend a little time with them first thing in the morning, get your day planned, you can talk through some of the things you're going to have to. You know, they listen real well, and they like to hear your voice. You know? They're very appreciative of every little thing you do for them. And I've got a lot of days planned by the time I've got short about. And I know basically what I got to do, but how am I going to attack it, you know?
Uh-huh.
We also said that's a forced kind of a thing, you know, twice a day I got to visit that bar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of nice to have that excuse to get away once in a while, like, oh, but the phone is going to ring, but it's going to bother you. And just doing chores. The hobby part is supposed to be writing, I guess, but.
It seems like most of the things we've said sort of overlap.
Oh, yeah.
It could be on some other list just as well.
Sure. Jerry, you had a comment.
I want to say something about it. I agree. I think that what each of these things does is it allows us a release so that we're open to other things. You know, I think reading the paper, running, whatever, it gets us away from it. We're not escaping that thought. Like you said, you can't escape the stress, but it's allowing a moment when all of a sudden, you know, some weight is lifted and we are now able to think in a more reasoned way about what's going on. I think sometimes I think back, you know, I work with kids in a residential setting. I can remember when I first started that there would be, you know, 15 kids around me and I want to solve all the problems at once. I hear 15 kids wanting something, and I wanted, you know, all the input was coming in, I wanted to solve it. And finally, what I had to learn was you solve the biggest problem or deal with one thing at a time. And I think that's what my activity is, you know, it kind of lets me do that, lets me decide which is the most important and deal with that area, and or just gets me not only physically tired to where the stresses, some stresses remove because I'm tired itself, and now I can think about it in a more rational way.
Is that externalized and internalized?
Is
that a helpful handle? If you got 15 things going on at once, and you're internalizing that all, getting out to run, or whatever activity you choose that allows you to externalize it and get one thing out there at a time to deal with.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, it's not, I can't say, excuse me, I got to go out and run now.
Yeah.
I have to, but it's times where, you know, I've kind of learned ways of dealing with it. I think major problems that come up where it is a matter of time that I can deal with it, then I think each one of these areas comes into play where we can now, that time allows us to you know, kind of heal ourselves, not just put a band-aid on the wound, but think about and come up with ways of dealing with it, not only at this time, but when it happens again, too. We don't like to keep on banging our head against the wall. We want to deal with problems in a way that makes sense in our situation.
Sounds like your nurturance for you is involved with the stress. In the middle of it. It's not postponement of the dealing of it.
Yeah.
Well, it's backing off so you can get your head together to deal with it.
Yeah. Giving us space.
You've got time when you're running down the road to think through how you're going to handle the situation when you get back to it.
Well, you know, not only, maybe if I went through a situation and I came off of it saying, well, there's got to be a better way to deal with that, and I think the solitude or whatever activity you're involved in gives you the distance now to deal with that in a more rational way. You know, we always have a way of problem solving with kids, and we never problem solve right after a conflict situation. We don't come up and run up to the kid and say, "Now, what would you do differently?" We usually wait an hour and say, okay, you know, this has happened, how do you deal with it? I try to do the same thing myself. You know, because the things that I say in a stressful situation usually aren't the best. You know, they're emotional, they're irrational, and then I, you know, say, oh, you know, why did that happen? You know, and that's going to happen because I'm human, but hopefully I can learn ways of dealing with those situations and by thinking about them and have better results the next time.
I think exercise or recreation in that sense, and exercise has a very important place because when we have all the stress coming in which causes physical symptoms, increasing pulses and increased adrenaline and these sort of things. This gives us a chance to work them off.
I, one thing about that too, I think that I mentioned in my group that I think the exercise or whatever can also be a cause of stress. And I did that to myself. You know, if there's a goal that I want to achieve, I can keep stress on myself that I have to accomplish that. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon things start happening. I'll be injured or become sick, or I'm running myself into the ground, literally. Mm-hmm. And so I think that can be the cause of stress itself. Any of these activities can be a cause of stress. Mm-hmm. If they're not done in a reasoned way, you know.
Yeah.
One of the things we've been talking about fall into the category of leisure,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the root of that word is Latin, it means to be permissive, to permit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Interesting. So my question is then, can we be nurtured by our non-leisure? Can we be nurtured by our work? I think when we were talking about self-expression, we kind of got into the fact that maybe our work, you know, has components, if not many components to it, that are nurturing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're not leisure. I mean, leisure time, as we, mm-hmm. I think, ill use the word. To push that a little bit deeper than just something we do to escape from or to post to.
We're in bad shape if our work is not nurturing. We're very bad shape, because then all the leisure in the world isn't going to give it to us by just by virtue of the fact it's leisure.
That's what I thought would come out of the corporation thing back there. Like
well,
this
well, it did. Yeah.
How about
yeah.
corporate? What kinds of things did you have on your list in the corporate list?
Well, we had lots of different things. For some people, it was the corporateness of a marriage that was nurturing. Community of faith, special friends, choir, communion. And like I said, that part of my job says, well, part I get nurturing from my job, but it's also related to the people that I work with. And that I work with different people, and on certain days that I work with a special group of people, I come home feeling very nurtured. Other times I come home not so nurtured because of the people that I work with. And another thing was study groups with peers, or an experience like Holden that was nurturing and in the corporateness.
Thought I had was that there's a lot of satisfaction in going to a new camp director. You know, here you are out all by yourself in the boonies somewhere. You got board members, you got committee men, you got kids, you got people always demanding your attention. It's kind of nice to know that the guy's got the same problems, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these brand new ideas to lay on your board. I'm telling you, especially from a camp.
I recently pulled a stone.
Right.
The
but, you know, that's good. That's nurturing. I feel good about that. I got a couple good ideas already going. But,
I think there's probably an element of, to put in a good word for the end, that stress is probably an element in nurture.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have a stimulus, there's no response. You don't learn without irritation.
Mm-hmm.
There's always that negative element related to pain that's in any kind of growth. So you probably need a certain amount of stress, and it becomes a matter where it ceases to be make a matter of managing it, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you sometimes hear the discussions like you want to get rid of stress, and that's very difficult to do. And remain above a vegetable state.
Very
yeah.
important mm-hmm. to make this distinction, because without tension, you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
There is no life without tension. Can't be. And tension is a creative, wonderful, nurturing thing in itself. What we're talking about when we use the word knowledge in a context like this is we're talking about excessive, damaging, destructive tension, or tension that hasn't been channeled into something that is good. Could I get that solitude for a minute? Because we're overlapping with some
lot
of other things here. Under the solitude group, we started out laughing because somebody suggested that went over there to be alone. So I found there was a crowd. That's what it is, a real good crowd. One of the things that came up was that solitude can be a way to withdraw for the purpose of gaining perspective. Gives you a chance to back off from things a bit and get out of the storm itself and find some retreat to then put things into their proper place. Somebody else suggested that it was a time to, and a way in which we can get in touch with feelings, with our own feelings. Because in the group, you tend to become a part of the group feelings. It's a little bit harder to isolate your own and feel them and resolve them and work them out. That there was a value in solitude simply as change in tempo, because there's a relief that comes in just, and something that spices up life a little bit if you take some of the sameness out of it and the drabness out of it, simply by changing the speed of life. And then we questioned for a bit if it was honorable to use solitude for escape, and I think we all came to the conclusion that it was a very healthy and very valuable thing to use solitude for escape. Only human beings are so stupid that they make that a dirty word. Animals know when to escape. I have a puppy dog that was born down in my basement. He had 11 siblings. And the mother took out all 12 puppies one at a time when they were about 2 or 3 months old. Drove my wife nuts because the mother dog took them out, rolled them in the dirt, and grabbed their jugular veins and shook them until they lay absolutely quiet, went into a kind of a trance, played dead. Then she'd back off. If they made a move, she'd dove right in there again. And she taught them that you've got to escape if you're going to keep your life. All canines do this. All canines know that you, if you give up, the other dog will back off, or the wolf will back off. Humans think that it's absolutely wrong to escape. We think of it as a dirty word. But escape is necessary when the pressure gets too much, or even the boredom gets too much. There has to be a way to escape if we're going to keep our sanity. Sleep as a form of solitude. Well, certainly the supposed 8 hours of one. But this, I think, was taking a nap. Now, I hope that whoever suggested that is right, because otherwise it puts me in a bad. reading had a form of solitude. And obviously, I think we'd all agree that this
reading
is
also a hobby.
What?
Reading is also a hobby.
Yes, yes, of course. And a lot of these things overlap with many things that have been said already. Then somebody suggested that solitude is a time in which you can most easily contemplate creation and feel something of the oneness with it. And I suppose we Lutherans have a serious handicap at this point, because our church has hastened past the first article of the Apostles' Creed, or the Creeds, so very rapidly in order to get at the magnificent truths of the second article that we don't know the Creator and the creation as well as we ought to know. Therefore, we're just starting to catch up on the fact that this is our Father's world, and we're already out in our Father's universe. But at least it gives a chance to look at the stars, or to look at the mountains, and to see the larch turning yellow up there now. I mean, just this last week, they've given a bill that the larch had started to turn up there.
Last 2 days.
Last couple of days. I added one that I didn't put down over there because I didn't get a chance, but solitude gives me a chance to pet my puppy. And that may strike you as being a trivial thing, but it's not a trivial thing. I recently had a heart attack, and it has been proved beyond, I think, any question now that there are fewer recurrent heart attacks after a first one in 1,000 people who have dogs or cats or some other pet that they can handle and stroke than in those that don't have it. The University of Pennsylvania has even isolated some substance that is in both the animal and the human very similar that they think may be one of the explanations of what's going on. But at any rate, nursing homes around the country now are starting to introduce pets and the stroking of itself. I could almost feel the healing of sitting there alone, quietly, stroking my dog who decided that this was great stuff and just decided to adore me because I was giving him something.
Did you ever get enough of it?
I never get enough. No. Of course not.
Prince, isn't there some research that, in terms of preventativeness as well?
Yes.
Not just for the recurrent.
Decrease the blood pressure?
Are you suggesting that it's biochemical and not just some good feelings connected? I mean, that it's...
But if you have a good feeling, it's biochemical immediately, isn't it?
What?
Right.
Yes.
Can you change feelings without changing something?
I'm just
worried
that they're going to find out what that is and they're going
to
put it in a pill form and then they're not going to get the dog.
One other thing, if you put me just to add another comment. I get a lot of my nurture out of the juxtaposition of the smallest and the largest. So I very often will spend 2 hours or 3 hours looking at just anything through a microscope. If I'm going to get my telescope out that night to look through a telescope. And there's something that it does to me to give this broad scope to the creation. It keeps reminding me. And I think that I feel a little differently when I am conscious of the enormity of this creation, and that I am in the middle of this enormous thing, than if I'm in the middle of a small, restricted, if I'm not conscious of its enormity, maybe it shrivels me a little bit. But at any rate, it's something that I have found highly nurturing to me. But now some of the others that are in that group, we had a lot of fun, I think. Anybody else want to add to what I said or change? Or?
I would add, if I didn't join your group, solitude would have been the group that I would have chosen. And I think the very first few times when I thought about solitude in as part of my life, it was stressful. Meeting myself was really stressful. And once I met myself a few times, I decided I wasn't so bad. And kind of liked it. And that whole sense, too, again, of what you're saying about the enormity of everything around, yet the smallness. I love to look at grass and bugs. I love the sky. So that whole sense.
The last time that I was at Holden was 4 years ago. And there was a kind of a class going on for 3 months. I had them for 2 or 3 weeks. And the first day I asked everybody to pick up 1 cubic yard and claim it for their own. And to keep that for 3 weeks. And every day to spend 2 hours in that 1 cubic yard. Now, we were not, we didn't measure it out for them. But what I wanted them to do was to sit within some space that they just simply claimed for themselves, place where they could be alone, and from which, in which they could think and meditate, in which they were separated from what else was going on around the village, in which they could look at the sky, and in which they could look at the ants crawling out of the ground at their feet, and in which they could grab a handful of dirt and say that there are a million miracles buried in that one handful of dirt. It drove them nuts the first week. Most of them couldn't tolerate solitude. Let's not speak too easily of solitude. It's a dreadful thing for most of us in our generation to be really alone. It's interesting when we talk about solitude, we always talk about activity, don't we? Reading, sleeping, listening to music, petting my puppy, whatever. Try sometimes sitting for 1 hour doing absolutely nothing.
Some of my favorite worships here in the winter community are around this, where we just have silence. I was part of a community for a while where there were some Quakers, and they insisted that on occasion we have silent services, and that drove me bats at first. But by the end of a month, I demanded that we have those ones. We're kind of nearing an hour, and I want to honor that, and knowing that bedtime is important too, or whatever.
It says right here we have to sleep.
That's right. I have one last question I'd like you to think about. You chose one that is your normal behavior. We've taken down the sign, solitude, self-indulgence, corporateness, self-expression, recreation, hobbies. Which would be your preferred mode? Which would you like to say would be the mode that you use for your nurturing? Is it the same?
No.
No.
And we don't need to go on to that. I just leave that as a thought for you to think about your own nurturing and how you go about that.
It'd be interesting though, wouldn't it, to see what would be the preferred mode?
Okay. Solitude. How many would prefer that? Self-indulgence. Mm-hmm. That carries with it a lot of negative connotations. Corporateness. When you say that, people that say corporateness, what kinds of places or in what kind of, what do you mean? I'm interested to see. Where's your corporateness?
Meaningful others.
Others.
Relational some activities, would that describe it?
Sometimes just one of it.
One of them? One of them. Oh, you're raising your hand.
Yeah.
Okay. Self-expression. Is that different for most of you? Mm-hmm. Recreation. Hobbies. So what did we come up with mostly? Corporateness, solitude, expression.
But maybe there are other things that were in these named categories that ought to be named.
Or maybe there's combinations of.
Okay.
Yeah. When I first thought which one would I prefer, I initially chose self-expression, but my thoughts went immediately both ways, solitude and corporateness. And I think maybe the common thread there is some kind of orientation towards a human being, either being by myself, with myself, not doing, but being, or being myself with another person. That was the sense, I think, that took.
Mm-hmm. That's different from what your focus was over there, it seems like. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There seems to be a tension between the and maybe even some guilt connected with it for some, I suppose, with the side of the self, of anything, to be concerned about self. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that before. Mm-hmm. And if in some respects, when I hear the word leisure, it was interesting to hear that word come in again. A lot of it is an anticipation of the God ahead. Mm-hmm. And so that's for me. That's a promise that God has for me. Mm-hmm. In both myself and for who I belong to as a group of people.
Roxy?
I was interested in that self-indulgent group too, because I think maybe the people that were there were quite honest. And what they listed was living, all the things we do daily, living. And I thought that was a really interesting list. I mean, it kind of tells me that maybe they are not under as much stress simply because they do all those things in their daily life.
Maybe for some.
For some, yeah.
But what about their kids? All of these proponents
the
are a part of life.
Yeah.
Life goes flat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In some major, they all have to be there. Yeah.
What did you choose that would be your preferred?
Solitude.
Solitude, and you had your mode of behavior was self-indulgence.
Right. I think I understand what Paul's saying a lot in terms of our Lutheran tradition, at least my own journey, whatever, in the Lutheran tradition, of not feeling the permission to talk and deal with self. And that's a new thing that's, for me anyway, to learn that maybe it's okay to be self-indulgent in the less pejorative sense of what that means. Mm-hmm. Taking the time to be alone, or taking the time to really be with someone.
I'm not feeling guilty.
No.
Mm-hmm. Your maleness have something to do with that?
Oh yeah, and being American doesn't.
Right here.
I really don't see self-indulgence and solitude that far apart in spirits, because when I go off by myself, that's self-indulgent. I am taking care of number one. I don't see that too far apart.
Mm-hmm. I used to have long arguments.
Doing
something for yourself.
I used to have long arguments with my wife, well, about, as opposed to present arguments, long arguments with my wife about some psychology professor she had, who said that there is absolutely nothing any human being does that is devoid of some self-indulgence or self-concern or selfishness. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, big, good Bible school person, a good Lutheran and all that good stuff, I have to say, well, there has to be some things we do, because God wants us to do things that are, at some point, that are for others and completely devoid of thinking of ourselves.
That's not possible if you believe the confession.
I know, that's right. Finally, when I, you know, began to recognize what that was being said in that psychology course, was really a statement about the theology of the cross.
I found right from the beginning a difference between the word nurture and stress, though. Because what I associate with nurture deals with growth. Probably tend to have a little bit of a, I mean in a positive sense of the word, a little bit of a task in it. It takes some effort. Mm-hmm. Dealing with stress in terms of personally, it's some way, at least mentally, getting away from it. I do almost all my magazine reading late at night. And I can get lost in some Penguin and the Falcons or something else. And, that's getting away from stress. But I see, to me there was quite a difference. Mm-hmm. The nurture being maybe a more of a long term, and the things dealing with stress more of a short term.
To escape the stress was a short term thing,
and step just out of it.
Yeah, postponement.
An article that I read, and I cannot document it at all in my head, but using the two words, the basic gist of it, the eustress, the euphoria, helpful, almost a correlation in being nurturing, eustress. The euphoric stress, the good stress, the tension stress that causes growth. Example, tonight at 7 o'clock, we were in here, some of us talking about war tax resistance. That set up a sense, I think, of some stress in there. What are the consequences? How do I do it? Do I want to do it? Why would I do it? Why would I do it part way? Should I do it all the way? If I don't, am I a bad Christian? All that stuff was being felt in here. On the other hand, that is probably a growing, nurturing, thinking stress versus distress, the destructive, the stuff you feel in your body, almost the sense of if I'm under eustress, I feel somewhat invigorated.
But your body doesn't know the difference.
Yes, your body does. Yes, your body does. Because
Stress,
yes. Eustress gives you energy. Distress robs you of energy.
Well, then why when they're adding up the points for potential heart attack, are eustress things listed as negatives towards things that will produce heart attack?
They do, that's true. Maybe because doctors write them out, and most doctors are men, and men haven't been liberated yet. We're working on it.
I don't think that has a bit to do with it.
I wouldn't bet on
my reaction would be that those things that you list as you stressful activities or you stressful thoughts or whatever like that could certainly be done or thought in a stressful way. In a bad stress, or it could become. If I go home now and bite my nails until April 15th, that's a distress, yeah.
All I'm saying is that your body, I don't think, can distinguish between eustress and distress in terms of its long-term effect. I mean, if you continually go to what you think is invigorating, like rallies to get you involved with resisting war tax, that's going to have its effect on your body.
Okay, maybe that's the example.
Christmas!
Huh. You get a nerve, a vital nerve.
I mean, for me, Christmas has always been eustress.
A happy marriage or promotion or a salary increase also contribute to the probability of disease.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean by I don't think your body can
just... Not just heart attacks, it's...
Yeah.
It's just more likely. Now, the weight factors, for instance, if you get a promotion... The weight factor isn't as bad as if your wife dies or you have a child or something. One may be a 10 score, one a 50 score. But you add up enough of the things that we would all think of as positive, and there is an increased probability of disease within a 2-year period of time.
Yeah, but there are some other studies that show the opposite.
Well, I haven't seen the other studies of this.
Well, women who don't marry are more likely to have breast cancer than,
He's talking not about staying married, but about getting married.
He's talking about the happy event. The happy event. The happy event is a stressful thing.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, but the same charts that make those measurements also, as I recall, at least the ones I've seen, also include... some kind of way of analyzing whether you've dealt with that stress or not.
Well, that's another matter, whether you deal with it. We're just talking about the event of it.
Okay, what is stress?
Yeah.